Love is a blank check when two high rollers tie the knot.
Can't wait till tonight.
Me too.
Gary was worth about $10 million in the late 80s.
Don't worry about a thing.
She was pretty. She was sexy. She was flirtatious. All of the things he liked.
Until the knot unravels in lies, betrayals, and bad business deals.
Gary had borrowed money from crime syndicates.
Pam did not want him in the house.
And when the lines between fear and control begin to blur, someone will pay.
You're just plenty of stuff that I just literally dig out of the ground, and you're a fried duck.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. It's the Greed is Good decade in Tucson, Arizona.
Six, five, four, three, two, one!
And as everyone in Tucson knows,
New Year's Eve, 1985, ladies and gentlemen!
Gary Triano is the man leading the way.
Gentlemen, there are only three guarantees in life: death, taxes, and a beautiful piece of land I have at the corner of Broadway and Olson.
The 42-year-old knows the ins and outs of his hometown, and that's because he owns a good portion of it.
Back in that day, the real estate market was hot, and there were some bargains here and there if you knew what you were doing.
We're all going to be rich!
He was God-gifted as a salesperson.
Woo! Gary had been involved in a lot of different real estate endeavors, high-end kind of stuff.
Before the area had truly grown completely, he had the foresight to put together a group of investors and developers, and when all this came to fruition, he would earn a percentage of the future profits.
Gary was worth about $10 million through his investments, and he was quite wealthy.
Like Gary, 27-year-old real estate agent Pam Phillips knows there's money in Tucson.
She was making money. She wasn't making in the millions, which is where she wanted to be, but she was successful.
And looking for more.
Pam saw Gary across a room and knew of him, knew of his charismatic personality, and knew that he had money.
She had a very good education, and she was pretty.
I'm Gary.
Triano, I know. I'm Pam.
Pam!
She was sexy.
Pam Phillips!
She was flirtatious. All of the things that apparently he liked.
After Gary and Pam ring in 1985 together, things heat up fast.
Gary and Pam's courtship was very quick.
You're not going back to your place. Ever.
Deal.
It was kind of a sweep you off your feet type of thing. She saw a guy who was attractive. He was obviously rich, and it looked like he was going to become richer and richer. His financial picture looked very good.
And there's no limit to how far he'll go to woo Pam.
I had a surprise for you.
Gary was handling a big real estate transaction out in Oro Valley, and he wanted to make an impression on her.
It's a win-win for both of us.
Thanks.
And the commission went to her.
But this can wait a little, don't you think? Thank you.
They were definitely lovers in terms of just, oh my goodness, he could do enough for her.
Can't wait till tonight.
Me too.
There's just one problem.
He was a married man.
He doted on his children. Tucson's not a huge town, so it wasn't hard to figure out that he was seeing another woman. A lot of his personal friends were absolutely against it, saying, don't do this, don't do this.
But Gary doesn't listen.
He actually called his wife at the time, who was in Europe vacationing with their children, and said, I've met the woman of my dreams and I want a divorce.
Mere weeks after signing his divorce papers.
I have something for you.
Oh! Yes! Yes!
You love it?
I love you! Oh, the ring's pretty nice, too. Oh.
The engagement ring that Gary gives Pam would draw attention to the fact that she was marrying very well financially.
It was like 7 carats or something. She liked that first-class treatment, always.
Pam came into the marriage with $2 million, and she believed they were actually equals. They got married on a yacht, and it was a black tie affair. They invited all kinds of rich, elite, wealthy people to their wedding. There's one famous photo where Gary's ready to cut the cake and he holds a knife to Pam's throat, just sort of for fun. They looked like a very happy couple.
Their lifestyle was everything works, everything's serviced, everything is taken care of.
They would spend, you know, tremendous amounts of money in restaurants, tip waitresses, ridiculous amounts of money.
They would attend events that you could describe as soirees, where, you know, everybody's dressed to the nines and you have your best jewelry on, your best behavior.
They traveled with an entourage, and for the most part, they were all high-tier people.
They used to run with Lee Majors, the TV actor, and his wife.
We have photographs of them on a private plane with Donald Trump and Marla Maples.
It's a wild and crazy life, and Pam relishes every minute of it.
Pam stayed in the real estate market to show she was an up-and-coming businesswoman. She would join things like the Junior League and social organizations like that.
While Pam hits Tucson's first-class social scene, Gary borrows money to finance his many business ventures.
For Gary to conduct business, he had to have cash.
He was borrowing money from people who had a lot of money.
Gary was a shrewd enough businessman that even though there was a potential for failure, Gary would always come out ahead.
He owned 25% of the Indian Bingo gambling casino here in Tucson. He was earning from the casino about $25,000 a month in cash.
To keep authorities off his money trail, Gary spends the cash as fast as he can.
That's a lot of loose money just to be spending on fun and games. And that's what he did.
Little baby. Then 2 years into their relationship, the fun and games takes an exciting turn.
Gary was the most loving, caring father that I think you could possibly be.
My gosh, the smell.
Pam was the doting, caring mother.
Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell closely examine Pam and Gary's relationship.
Gary and Pam are both on an upward trajectory. They both want to make more, have more, do more, and they're both working hard to make them all happen. And I think that's part of what keeps things exciting and passionate for them.
Feels like we're partners in life, we're partners in business, we're raising kids together, we're going to be successful together. Sounds like a neat idea now. But it doesn't seem to me like either one of them is really thinking real far down the road about what kinds of things ought we to be doing for long-term family success, long-term business success.
Gary and Pam are living the ultimate American dream. And Gary's Midas touch seems unstoppable.
Center, you have the casino, of course, which is going to make us a ton of money.
There was a casino operation for the Barona Indian tribe in San Diego. He had the expertise to put it together.
So don't worry about a thing. Casinos are my bread and butter. This thing is a no-brainer. So what do you think?
This time, he's made a gross miscalculation.
Gambling in itself by the federal government is not illegal, but the states have their say-so in whether you build a casino or you don't build a casino. And unfortunately, we didn't have a compact from the state of California, so they kept closing us down.
Without a proper state gambling license, the house loses big time.
They would break up our slot machines. They would raid our tables. It was an awful thing.
The fallout is felt in other areas of Gary's life, too.
Hey, hon. How was your day?
I don't feel like talking right now.
Shh, Gary, the baby's asleep.
Luckily, Gary still has his cash cow to fall back on, Papago Bingo Casino in Tucson. Until it too dries up.
In the early 90s, the legislature changed how the casinos were run. Everything went back to the Native Americans, so they were able to manage and run their own casinos.
He was rapidly approaching a cash balance of zero.
He was losing money. He couldn't pay back his investors.
He had debtors that were all over the place. Issues that he harbored from the public, me included.
But there's one person Gary can't keep in the dark forever.
Don't answer.
Why?
Pam thought that Gary was worth about $10 million or so.
Look, cash flow's a bit tight these days.
You'll bounce back. You always do.
Not this time. I don't think bouncing back's an option. I owe serious money, Pam. To serious people.
So borrow some.
I can't.
She realized pretty quickly that Gary didn't have the money that she thought he had.
She was angry that the money was gone, that the image that she wanted to achieve was crumbling.
It's all starting to unravel around her, and she feels very trapped.
So does Gary.
Gary had borrowed money from people who were associated with crime syndicates.
The investors were so angry that he believed he was a target for these investors.
And soon, he's not the only target.
Gary needed to know where she was at all hours of the day.
He lied. And he hooked him.
Gary and Pam Triano are the perfect power couple until Gary's business interests collapse and Pam learns that Gary owes millions of dollars he doesn't have. Gary and Pam's home life, which now includes a second child, a daughter, is hit hard.
Another check bounced today.
Everything she thought Gary was and who he was is all an illusion.
Here.
What do you want me to do with this?
Sell it.
Pam did fund their lifestyle when Gary's money was running out.
Hard times?
Yeah.
Gary took engagement ring from Pam and offered that up as collateral to Neil McNeese.
Neil McNeese was a man of super substance. He came from a family that were in the uranium business. And he'd even make Triano look like a small-time guy. And that's hard to do.
But McNeese doesn't live off family money alone.
The suspicion was at the time that all of his income and his wealth came from narcotics. Neil McNeese lent him $80,000 against the value of the ring.
The loan is a big help to Gary, at first.
Subsequently, the story goes that Neil McNeese learned the ring wasn't a true diamond. It was a cubic zirconia or a fake diamond.
And its true value is only $8,000.
Son of a... Give me Mr. Triano, please.
He lied, and he hooked him.
Hi, this is Gary. Not here.
Call him again.
Well, if you pull a shenanigan on me like that, it's not too likely I feel good about you anymore, is it?
This is Gary, not here to take your call right now.
The stories that circulated about Neil McNeese were that he was very violent towards anyone who crossed him, offended him, caused him grief or loss of finances.
I heard via the grapevine that Neil was out to kill him.
And it seems Neil isn't the only one.
Gary had lost a lot of money for people. And if you talk to those folks, Gary was the worst person in the world because he had lost their fortunes that they had entrusted to him.
Can Gary climb out of this financial and marital hole?
Now he has all kinds of people after him. And so we can expect that there's going to be conflict in his relationship with Pam, that he's not going to be in a good emotional place, and that that's going to trickle into every area of his life. There was sort of this arrangement where she was going to have this lifestyle and he was going to deliver it. And so at this moment, he is not able to do that.
Now the facade is crumbling, and I imagine that he is experiencing ever-increasing anxiety about the fact that, you know, is she going to stay with me? He's got to be increasingly anxious that as she realizes that there's not a lot of there, she may not be there.
So in all likelihood, this is going to, at a bare minimum, disappoint Pam, and at the extreme level, really upset her. So my hunch is that she's going to be putting some pressure on him, that he needs to figure out a way to get their lifestyle up and going so that they can get to keep everything that they've been trying to acquire.
With bankruptcy on the horizon, Gary hits rock bottom.
He was depressed. He was drinking a lot more.
He was very worried about the investments that he had made that were sort of crumbling around him and worried that people were going to come after him for that. He started to become paranoid. Everything was falling apart for him. He became more and more agitated. And so his erratic behavior and his obsession with Pam increased.
Pam turned heads, and I'm sure men looked at her, and I'm confident that he didn't want anybody getting too interested in her and her being any too interested in anyone else.
Where are you going?
Out.
Out where?
Out.
Gary needed to know where she was at all hours of the day.
Pam alleges he became very possessive, very jealous.
He would be calling her incessantly to find out when she was coming home.
You're late.
So?
Where were you?
None of your business.
Yes, it is.
Oh, please. Gary, let go of me. Let go! Ow!
Pam alleges he became physical with her on one or two occasions, making some forceful inquiry about her relationship with other people.
She believed that Gary was dangerous and was a threat to her safety.
Pam! Open the door!
She made a claim to one of her friends that Triano actually pulled a gun out on her.
Gary, stop it! Stop!
I could not say he never lost his temper or maybe even struck her. I don't know.
Hey, guys! Daddy's home. Pam?
Pam is obviously not happy with anything that's going on. She's looking for a lifeboat.
Pam?
And the minute he had to declare bankruptcy, she was out of there.
Gary, I think we both know we can't be together anymore.
Well, he was on vacation in Mexico. She sold their property and just fled.
It was in her name.
He was very, very unhappy about it. What distressed him would have been What happens with my two kids from my marriage with Pam? Are they just gone?
And I took the kids to Aspen, where I hope we can move on with everything.
It's the beginning of a long battle.
Pam would wake up in the middle of the night and wonder if he was outside stalking her.
I could tell that there was no love lost between them.
Pam and Gary Triano's marriage collapses under the weight of big debts and allegations of abuse, leaving Pam a single mom and Gary alone in Tucson. Pam and the kids, now 6 and 3, settle down in Aspen. But Pam is anxious.
Pam was so scared of him that she would wake up in the middle of the night and wonder if he was outside, you know, just sort of stalking her.
So she limits Gary's visits.
How you guys doing?
Be good this weekend.
Big hug, big hug, big hug.
Pam said she had a restraining order against Gary and did not want him in the house.
I'll have the kids back Sunday night.
Actually, Saturday.
That means I only get one day.
It's that or nothing, Gary.
She had a lot of control over whether or not he saw his children. And so his biggest heartache is he's not able to see them very much.
As Gary spins further into debt, Pam thinks it's all a facade.
He didn't have any money, really. I mean, his child support was ridiculously low.
Pam was adamant that there was money hidden that Gary had stashed away, and she felt she had claim to that. He's so poor that friends are paying for his dry cleaning.
He has to borrow money from people, and he's just sort of living, as a scrapper. Yet, ironically enough, he's still playing golf regularly at the Westin La Paloma Resort, but he hasn't paid his golf dues in a very long time. So people liked Gary, and they were willing to help him out, and they were willing to let some things slide. But he was living on borrowed time and the goodness of people.
Pam has been given a restraining order. And so that does justify her position when she says, I don't want you coming here and I'm concerned about you being with the kids. I think what she's actually trying to do is punish him. I think she doesn't want him to have a close relationship with the kids. I think she's trying to limit that. And I think she's trying to sort of capture the kids for herself so that they will like her better and like him less.
Unfortunately, parents often do use the children as pawns in the litigation about the divorce and the finances and all of that.
Those two are bound together forever. Even when the kids turn 18, they'll still be seeing each other at graduations, weddings, birth of grandchildren. And so it's somebody that you had resentment toward and that you had a breakup with, and you will be seeing them for a very, very, very long time.
There's been so much acrimony that every little thing that comes up becomes sort of the next battle in the war.
1 year into the divorce, Pam wants a fresh start.
Pam's attempting to start this online business called Star Babies. It's a horoscope reading of what your child's future is going to be. This was the early to mid-90s when personal computers were sort of just becoming prevalent in households.
Luckily for her, there's a computer whiz living down the street.
Ron Young was an older gentleman that lived in the neighborhood.
Pam?
Oh, your shoe's on. Mm. Office is this way. Oh, so sorry about that. Oh, it's a total mess in here.
It's okay, I'm good.
Would you like me to take your coat?
All right.
He was very computer-oriented, and he was into the internet when very few of us even knew the internet existed.
He offered to assist Pam in the startup of this internet business.
And that's not all.
Pam had some money from the sale of the house, and he was going to help her start investing it, trying to get Star Babies off the ground.
Soon, their relationship moves beyond just business.
A little bit more?
Please.
They would have dinner together, and Pam would have candles out on the table. And that's when I knew that, okay, it was a little bit more than just a friendship.
Ron was not Pam's type at all. The fact that they got together in the first place is very unusual and sort of striking.
But striking and unusual seem to be what Pam wants.
Follow me.
After dinner, they would go upstairs to Pam's bedroom. Pam was always very careful to make sure that Ron was gone by the morning before the kids woke up.
Back in Tucson, Gary is moving on too.
That's like 35 stories.
He did travel to China and other foreign countries to put deals together. And China, you know, at that time, gambling wasn't allowed. But he had a program that he was trying to develop.
He's not defeated. He knows that he's going to rise from the ashes, so to speak.
When the Chinese hear our offer, they're not going to know what hit them. Oh, it's my kid. Yeah, I got to let you go.
He would call just to see how they were doing.
Hi, sweetheart. How are you?
And I just thought very well of him for doing that, because that just showed that he really cared.
How's your big brother doing? You taking good care of him?
They were cute kids. They were well loved.
But that doesn't stop Gary from planting the occasional dig.
Tell your mom to stop feeding him mac and cheese every night, okay?
She had to have help all the time. I don't think she even knew how to cook, and much less take care of a couple of kids.
What are you telling her?
Nothing.
Now, I'd really like to know.
Jeez, Pam, relax.
No!
But every call leads to a fight.
Fine.
It was the traditional arguing over, well, this year I get them for Christmas, no you don't, that type of thing.
The children get used as pawns that, you know, you're not paying me enough child support, you don't get to see the kids. They were going through a very acrimonious divorce, and there were allegations being thrown out by both sides.
Pam claimed that he was writing her poetry and that the tenor of the poetry was harassing.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Let me see the kids or I'll sue you.
And Gary had the same contention.
You tell him he's never gonna see the kids if he keeps this up.
That Pam was harassing him by having her attorney call him umpteen times during the day, and also by having these orders of protection that were very restrictive to the point where he couldn't even see his children.
There was no love lost between them.
It's a ticking time bomb.
It caused massive damage to mainly the head, leg, torso.
He's nowhere to be found. I mean, he's gone.
Former power couple Gary and Pam Triano are now rebuilding their lives 800 miles apart. But a contentious divorce keeps them at each other's throats. Weighed down by all of this, Gary finds solace in one of his favorite things.
November 1st, 1996, Gary is playing golf at the La Paloma Country Club. He was a very, very good golfer. And he played every day.
Turns out, nothing about today will be routine.
What Gary didn't know is that when he went home, there was really a surprise birthday party being put together at his house.
When he gets into his car, there's a package in the front seat, and he thinks it's an early birthday gift.
Happy birthday to me.
Meanwhile, Don Redmond and his wife are driving to Gary's surprise party.
We were headed to his birthday party, and they just happened to have the radio on.
In local news.
And what do you think we heard?
A prominent Tucson business developer lost his life today in what is believed to be a mob-style execution in a country club parking lot.
My wife said immediately, that's got to be Gary. And it was. We got to the birthday party and everybody's out in the street and they all knew it. Everybody had heard it. We all had our little reverence together and sorrow together, and we all went our separate ways. I mean, how could you not be shocked?
We hadn't experienced anything like a car bombing before or since. The explosion and the force of it tore off part of the roof, but it also did damage to the undercarriage of the car. The windshield was blown into a swimming pool that was 400 yards away from where the car was parked. The explosion caused massive damage to mainly the right side of his body, his head, leg, torso. By all accounts, he died instantly from the projectiles of the bomb and the concussion of the explosion itself.
News of Gary's death travels fast.
When I heard that Gary had been killed, I was shocked, and right away I called Pam.
She is beside herself. She's distraught. She's inconsolable.
People handle grief in different ways. It can be that she truly is grieving over the fact that her children have lost their father, but I also very much agree with the concept of we don't know why she was crying. There are lots of reasons that people cry, and so that's something that only Pam knows.
It's difficult to read a lot into people's grieving reactions, because even if the breakup was bad and there was acrimony and all of that, if something horrific happens to the other person, I do think it can call to mind the good times that they had and remembering when they first met.
As friends and family mourn Gary, the police investigation begins.
Officers spent days and days collecting all the parts from the surrounding streets and the country club itself.
Explosion debris suggests a pipe bomb killed Gary.
You don't need any sophisticated tools. You'll need a drill, a pair of pliers, wire cutters, and a handsaw, screwdriver, and you're done. That's all you need. I have screws, nuts, bolts, batteries. So based on what's in my garage, you could say I killed Gary Triano. He doesn't practice any personal security. He doesn't lock his car doors. He leaves the windows down. The killer could just walk up to the car. Nothing about this would stand out to anyone. So Gary finishes his round of golf, walks to his car.
Gary has no idea he's being watched.
It was a remote-controlled detonation, something that you would see, you know, kids using for a model airplane or a model car. Someone had to be within about less than a quarter of a mile away for the remote control detonator to work.
Happy birthday to me.
The damage to his body showed that he probably was opening the bag when the bomb exploded. There was not going to be any chance that he survived that massive of an explosion. No one saw anyone approach Gary Triano's car to place the bag inside.
Police draft a list of possible suspects. Furious investors, mostly.
Gut reaction was, this is a mob hit. Car bombing, large public place, meant to send a message.
But a message from whom?
As one guy put it, he says, yeah, I was involved in one of Gary's deals. I lost $65,000. Then he very openly says, I'm not going to kill somebody for $65,000. We, during the investigation, didn't find any connection to the mob.
Then police learn about Neil McNeese.
The story is, Neil McNeese found out that the ring didn't cover the cost of the money that he had loaned to Gary. And because of that, Neil McNeese had Gary Triano killed. There's a great gap in time between when the loan was made and when the death occurred. You're talking years. The Neil McNeese story is a great story if you just want to be entertained. Is it factual? No. It wasn't like anybody was out so much money that they were sitting there going, I don't care. I don't want my money back. I just want Gary Triano dead.
Days after Gary Triano's death, detectives in Tucson are stumped until they get a tip. 1 month before the explosion, a mysterious van was abandoned 500 miles from the murder scene.
Yorba Linda, California. This van's parked on the street where it shouldn't be. Neighbors call the police. Yorba Linda Police Department comes out.
It was a rental van, and when it wasn't returned, the rental agency reported it stolen.
And inside the van are divorce papers related to Gary and Pam. There's a map of Tucson.
There is a list of close associates of Gary Triano.
The other odd thing that the police find is a shotgun.
Some nebulous evidence that doesn't mean a lot to them until they learn about the death of Gary Triano on the news.
But it means a lot to Tucson PD.
The van had been rented by Ron Young, the same Ron Young that had been helping Pam Phillips with her internet business.
We later find out through hotel records, Ron spent 2 weeks in Tucson during the summer of 1996.
Months before Gary Triano is killed.
Do we have evidence that Ron Young was following Gary directly? No. But we know Ron Young was in Tucson well before the murder.
And Ron could have motive.
Pam was telling her friends that Triano was abusive. She made a claim that she was afraid of him, afraid of what he was capable of. So detectives from Tucson went up to Aspen. They became very concerned about the whereabouts of Ron Young, wanting to speak to him, trying to figure out how he may have fit into their investigation.
The first person they speak to is Pam.
They had a lot of questions for Pam about her relationship with Ron Young, where he was, whether she had any information about him.
He said he would help me with my website. He took thousands of dollars of my money, thousands. And now I can't find him.
Pam hasn't seen Ron in months.
Ron has actually stolen from three other people, not just Pam.
He was truly just a con artist.
A con artist that no one can find.
He's got a gun with him.
That's when he set up the kill scenario.
When former real estate magnate Gary Triano is killed in a mob-style car bombing, a stolen van leads police to Ron Young, Gary's ex-wife's lover, except Ron is nowhere to be found.
The police simply could not find Ron Young anywhere. This went on for almost 8 years. There was just no trace of him.
Then the cops seek outside help.
In 2005, they got the TV show America's Most Wanted to do a show on Ron Young, not about the murder, because they didn't want to tip off Ron Young that they were looking for him, but the show was about the fraud accusations in Aspen.
If you have any information, please call the number on screen.
A caller calls in and says, Ron Young is a patient of mine, I'm a chiropractor, and he has an appointment in my office tomorrow.
And when Ron shows up the next day, Fort Lauderdale, Florida's finest are there to greet him.
He's got a gun with him. He was arrested and convicted on weapons charges as the detectives were putting everything together.
The pieces certainly seem to fit.
He was here in Tucson for 2 weeks. We think that's when he surveilled and basically set up the kill scenario.
Not only that, he also has the necessary skills.
Ron, he is internet driven.
You could learn how to build a bomb on the internet. There were instructions for it. It really wasn't out of the realm of Ron Young's expertise. I mean, you could see how he might be able to build a bomb like that.
All of it is circumstantial, but police obtain a warrant.
There is a treasure trove of information that law enforcement finds in Ron Young's apartment. There are floppy disks, there are jump drives, there's so much information. It takes literally months for the police to go through it all.
And what they find astounds them.
Ron Young has been like a pack rat. He's kept every detail of his relationship with Pam on computers, recordings, notes, faxes, which he's left for the police to discover.
It seems Ron didn't steal from Pam. Instead, she owes him money.
They find spreadsheets that Ron has made about all the payments that Pam has made him. I mean, he keeps meticulous notes.
The accounting sheet showed that Pam Phillips owed Ron Young $400,000, and she was paying it off in monthly payments of cash every month for years. She would send a package to Ron Young, and then Ron Young, when he received the package, would deposit cash into his account.
So where did Pam get the money?
The police found that despite the divorce, Pam still carried a $2 million life insurance policy on the life of Gary Triano.
And until the children turn 18, Pam is the sole trustee.
The accounting sheets themselves don't amount to murder.
But Ron's telephone calls with Pam just might.
Amongst those things that were very important to him were some microcassettes. And so we hit play, and we now have Ron Young talking to Pamela Phillips.
Ron, hi.
You're late on your payment.
I've paid you enough.
A lot of their contact was about the money that Pam owed him.
About enough to live on for about a year.
You're just... plenty of stuff that I literally dig out of the ground, and you're a fried duck.
Ron Young would tell her, that's my money. You owe me that money. You're holding on to it. It's mine. You need to pay it to me.
Well, I tell you, you're going to be very serious. When you sit in a women's prison for murder...
The insinuation is that he killed for her. And if he doesn't have something to hold over her, she's just going to be in the wind. They were bound together by this tremendous secret and this tremendous responsibility and obligation that they had to each other.
An obligation that took root behind closed doors.
Ron isn't the next guy she's going to marry, but he has value to her.
You know, it's a win-win for both of us.
The agreement between Pam and Ron is that she will get the $2 million insurance payout, and he will get $400,000 from her.
Okay. And I'll do it.
She's like a piranha, just vicious.
Ron Young is charged with murder in October 2008, a full 12 years after Gary is killed. Next up, Pam Phillips.
When we went to arrest Pam in Aspen, we learned that she had left the United States.
She's not going to stick around waiting for them to come find her, so she disappeared.
She ends up in Austria, one of the world's richest countries.
She's on a hunt for her next husband.
She's ultimately located in Vienna, Austria, and arrested there. She denies that she's Pam Phillips. They produce her passport and her driver's license. She concedes, okay, I'm Pam Phillips. She's flown back to the United States and turned over to me.
In 2010, Ron Young pleads not guilty, to no avail.
Ron Young was convicted for first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder.
He's sentenced to natural life in prison in Arizona, which means no probation, no parole, that you will die in prison.
In a separate trial in 2014, 18 years after the murder, Pam also pleads not guilty.
The defense said, well, this $400,000 was for his financial advice. I mean, that's a lot of money for advice about where you should invest your money.
The jury isn't swayed.
She's found guilty of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and first-degree murder. She gets the same sentence, natural life in prison.
I was dumbfounded. I was really... Taken by surprise.
Pam was a very greedy lady. It was all about money.
It's very conceivable, and it's supported by the investigation, is that Ron is desperate. He has to get out of Aspen. He has no money. Pam is desperate for money. Pam says, if Gary dies, I get $2 million. And that gives rise to Ron going, if I could get a chunk of that $2 million, that would be great. So the only way to get that money is for Gary to die. So Ron Young needs to get out of Aspen. He agrees with Pam that I'll go to Tucson, I'll kill Gary. You get the $2 million, and you're going to pay me monthly for the murder.
Pam's not somebody who goes out and does profoundly destructive stuff because it's fun for her. Pam, I think, is a sociopath, somebody who does destructive things because it gets them something else. It will get me something that I feel I'm entitled to. In her case, it'll get me some money from an insurance policy. It'll also get me an arrangement with my kids that's free and clear of this custody battle I don't have to deal with anymore.
Sociopaths like to win, and they hate to lose. And so if you look at Pam and Gary's life, Pam took a lot of losses in a relationship with him. She thought that she was going to be with this rich guy and have all of these things, and that went away. And so her anger begins to grow and grow. And so what a sociopath does in this situation is they start to weigh out the scenarios. And she weighs it out and decides that killing him is actually the greatest win for her of all.
I think her rationale was probably, he sucked me into this marriage by this bogus facade that he was real rich, and it worked, and I'm mad about that. And I think she probably used that to sort of rationalize and justify, you know what? I'm entitled to stuff that I'm having a hard time getting because of you, and because of that, I'm entitled to eliminate you.
Those closest to Gary believe that justice has been served, but that does nothing to bring him back.
Gary was a man of substance and big heart and liked by everyone. And the fact that he got into a situation he couldn't get out of and was murdered for money is just despicable.